Today is January 18th, 2017, and this is episode number 394 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, cranky yet sexy. To get the full story on anything we write. Wait, what are we doing here? Content? No, that's the other one. Yeah. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. I'm going to have this memorized any day now. I'm going to have this memorized. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. And I think the thing I like most is that despite messing that up, we will not start it over.
No, because we are professionals.
I was 42 seconds into this podcast when I completely borked the script, but we will not start over.
Top men.
Yeah, and fortunately, Blue Apron is here to back us up because they are our sponsors this week. We are super excited about that.
Actually, yes. I am excited about Blue Apron.
I love Blue Apron. Can't wait to talk. Honestly, cannot wait to talk about the Blue Apron.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to talk about the Blue Apron.
By the way, I do think it's kind of sad that you're a bit cranky today.
Yeah, but sexy.
You are sexy. I'm not sad about that.
It is known.
Maybe your sexiness comes in part from the mysterious aloofness that comes from being cranky.
Yeah, Nightshade ain't buying it.
Nope, she didn't buy into that one little bit.
I
speak cat, and if other people did, I think we'd have to actually edit the show.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, we're safe though.
Yes, we are. Except for the other people that speak cat, and then for those people, it's okay. We all know. Do we have topics today?
I don't know. Do we? Blue Apron would probably appreciate it if we did. We love them. Now, we do have topics, of course. The first one was a story you wrote up.
Oh, about yes. About Chernobyl. Yeah. So, Tom Wheeler.
Tom Wheeler, yes. Yeah. Top men.
I think I might be a little cranky today, too.
Oh,
which I know is really rare for me.
Yeah. It actually is. And you have a reason to be cranky. And I'm not actually cranky. So, you know, whatever.
I'm just projecting onto you.
No, I claimed it as my, weren't you just there? I claimed it as my title.
Top men. Anyhow, Tom Wheeler.
Tom Wheeler.
So,
what's that rascal up to?
Oh, he's trying to save net neutrality. And the deal is that he's going to be out of a job pretty soon because presidential administration changes. And he's been a champion of net neutrality, which is great, but on the other hand, when he went into that position as the FCC chairman, we were kind of worried that that he wouldn't have our best interests at heart. But he did.
Yeah, I mean, we were seriously worried about his appointment to the FCC.
Right, because he was a cable industry lobbyist.
Yeah, he was a lobbyist, and you know, it's like, what the heck is Obama doing appointing a lobbyist to head up the agency designed to oversee the industry that he used to lobby for? And the funny thing is, he actually turned out to be a pretty darn good FCC chairman from our vantage point, at the very least. Yes. Certainly on the issue of net neutrality.
Right. So he was very aggressive at pushing for net neutrality, and a couple years ago he got
pushing for it. I mean, we already had net neutrality.
He was
advocating for keeping it and protecting it.
There we go. Yeah, and in this instance, your mostly pedantic perspective was appropriate.
It's usually appropriate, but you know, Mostly pedantic. It's always appropriate. Mostly pedantic. Go ahead, please.
And we'd like to thank our sponsor this week. Anyhow, so yes, he's been a proponent of net neutrality and maintaining net neutrality, even as the big name ISPs were pushing to have their own control over data flowing through the internet.
Right. The ISPs, the industry wants to be able to basically make money by charging for access to different content providers.
Right.
From their perspective, they need to be able to do that because of infrastructure demands and because, for instance, certain big players might use a lot more data to it, YouTube, Netflix, whatever, Apple.
Right. Yeah, but then...
And
the other part of that is a lot of these data services that would be streaming through their networks could also be considered competitors.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of it. I mean, the reality is that the cable companies here in the States have wanted to use this excuse for the, you know, certain parties using more data than others. They've wanted to use that as an excuse to be able to turn that into to more of a profit center. Mm-hmm. Because here, the reality is that it should not matter to them where I'm getting my data. If I'm paying for X amount of data, I should be able to get that data. And the big players are already paying for their pipeline to the interwebs.
Right.
They shouldn't have to be paying more to be able to access individual users, which is what the cable industry wanted. And more importantly, that entire concept would really turn the internet into a place where capital was controlling data in all ways. Only the biggest players would be able to afford to be able to get to we the people.
And that's something that the FCC and Tom Wheeler wanted to prevent. And so we ended up with FCC regulations that prohibited the ISPs from doing just that. And those regulations have been in place for the past 2 years. And it sure looks to me like the internet is doing just fine with those regulations in place. But
yeah, despite the cries and predictions of doom and gloom.
Right. And
from the pipes.
Right. So now we have lawmakers saying that they want to remove those regulations. And Tom Wheeler is saying, look, guys, we can't do that. That's a bad thing. And so he just very recently gave his last public speech. And it was at the Aspen Institute, where he laid out his case for why we need to maintain these regulations. And so I think it's great that he is still with going into his last days as the FCC chairman, pushing to make sure that we have an open internet.
Well, all right. So I gotta be mostly pedantic and say, when you say lawmakers, it's not lawmakers. It's the GOP. It's the Republican Party. It's lawmakers from the Republican Party who want to tear down net neutrality protections.
Yes, yes, you're right. I said it as a general general thing, but yes, to be specific, it is the Republican Party and Republican lawmakers that want to make these changes.
And this is pertinent because the Republican Party is going to have control of, it does have control of the House and Senate, and will also have the White House as of Friday, Mm-hmm. So the point of Chairman Wheeler's message here is talking to these folks who will in fact have the power to tear down these net neutrality laws that have been absolutely vital and integral to the development and well-being of the internet to date. And they will have the power to change that and are seem likely to do so.
All right. Now I have to be mostly pedantic. You said laws, they're regulations. They're not laws.
The FCC has regulations. Mm-hmm. Congress would pass a law that could affect those regulations.
Yes, that is true.
So yes. Yeah, so my mostly pedantic self was entirely correct.
No, but we're going to let it slide.
No, because it's the Congress. I'm talking about the Congress will have the power to affect these regulations through laws.
Yes, but what you said is they were going to change the laws.
Yes.
No, they're going to enact new laws that impact the regulations the FCC put in place.
All right, listeners, I'm calling shenanigans there, sir.
You don't need to call shenanigans on yourself. You don't need to be hard on yourself like that.
I am calling shenanigans on you. Okay. All right. All right. You're right. They would in fact write new laws, but those new laws would change existing laws and would also change potentially the existing regulatory framework. I think my use of the word change here is entirely appropriate.
I think you completely changed the way you were describing what you said.
But that's just nitpicking, isn't it?
I know. I'm just a jerk like that. Yes. But okay, so now Brian, the mm-hmm. whole thing using legislation to change how the FCC works and to tear apart the net neutrality regulations that we have in place today could go another way. And that could be that it's done from within the FCC.
The FCC. Yeah, right. Right. So whomever the Trump administration appoints to, and matter of fact, that may already be known, by the way. It probably is already known.
Right. But we're more important, or we're more focused on semantics.
Yes, exactly. Whoever the Trump administration appoints to chair the FCC could well usher in new regulations that within the existing legal framework.
Right. Now, that includes its own set of hurdles, because there's the open hearing phase, which is required, where they solicit comments from everyone, both pro and con. And what they would need to do is show that over the past 2 years, since the open internet, I forgot what the last word in the title is, but anyhow, the open internet regulations, they need to show that those have been detrimental to the health of the internet and communication, or they need to show that the market has changed so radically in the last 2 years that these regulations are no longer necessary. And
yeah, color me skeptical that any such requirements would keep whatever kind of nonsense these folks want to do from happening. Color me skeptical.
I would like to think that the system that's in place would handle this appropriately. However, when you have one political party that is hell-bent on doing whatever it is that they want, then everything kind of goes on its ear.
Right. And this, by the way, is yet another area where politics and technology intersect. There's no way around it. Folks who don't want to hear us talk about politics are going to probably have to turn us off. because we're going to end up talking a lot about technology and politics over the next 4 years.
I think that that's totally true. But what I would request is that you don't turn us off if you disagree with us. Listen and then give us your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, and if we're, when we're wrong, tell us where we're wrong and why we're wrong.
I
agree. Like hearing contrary opinions. We actually love hearing contrary opinions.
We love when you point out when Brian's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
When we're wrong.
I actually I am usually entertained when people like yell at me and call me an idiot.
I prefer they don't call you an idiot, but it's okay to firmly express your opinion. How's that?
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true. The end of net neutrality is a significant threat to all of us. Whatever your political opinion, my guess is that, first of all, we certainly have people on, you know, both sides of the so-called aisle here in the States. I mean, the reality is that there, you know, are millions of permutations of political feelings, mm-hmm. but the philosophical divide that is gripping the U.S. at the moment and much of the world, we have listeners on both sides of that aisle, and which is great. But I imagine that the vast majority of our listeners support net neutrality, no matter what side of the political aisle they otherwise fall on.
I speculate that you're right.
And so I would urge anyone listening to this podcast who cares about net neutrality to talk to your representatives and your senators about the importance of maintaining net neutrality.
I think that's an excellent idea, because without that communication, in some cases, the people representing us at the federal level are operating in a vacuum. And if they,
no, they're not operating in a vacuum, because they're operating in an environment that is fueled by corporate lobbying money. And it's the opposite of vacuum.
Okay. So they're operating in a vacuum of information from us, while at the same time being in a very combustible environment fueled by lobbyists.
Right. Right. And I mean, you know, and I would actually, on this note, I would encourage people to be in contact with their elected representatives on any issue that's important to them. Just for the record, I don't care what your political affiliation is. Get involved in the process. That's great. And but when it comes to net neutrality, if you're interested in it, you're probably going to need to help fight for it over the next 4 years.
I think you're right. I think that maintaining net neutrality is a battle that has already begun, regardless of whether or not people realize it. It's already underway. And I think that's why Mr. Wheeler made his final public speech as the FCC director about protecting net neutrality.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And I suspect we're going to end up missing him.
I think so.
At the very least on this issue.
Which is just fascinating, because at the beginning, we were very skeptical. And he proved to be exactly the person we needed at the time, and I'm really going to miss him.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. So while we're talking about politics mm-hmm. and technology, mm-hmm. we've got another issue that I think is going to be on the front burner over the next 4 years is the subject of encryption.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling you're right.
Mm-hmm. And which is an answer. Encryption is not a, is not a topic that is divided by the political aisle in the U.S. I think people on the left and right are for law enforcement having backdoors into our devices. And people on the left and right are adamantly against law enforcement or the government or anyone else having backdoors. I like to think of that not so much as a political divide as the ignorance divide, but you know, whatevs.
Well, you know, mostly pedantic.
but this is an issue. This is an issue that, that does not have a left or left and right connotation to it. And I have seen vigorous arguments for and against encryption and for and against government backdoors into our devices from again both sides of the aisle. So, but I suspect that this is an issue that really started heating up again for like you know like the 15th iteration. It started heating up earlier this year with the cell phone of Saeed Farooq, one of the two San Bernardino terrorists.
Right.
He was killed, and we had the FBI had his work's iPhone. They wanted to be able to get into it, and they couldn't, and they wanted Apple to help, and Apple said we can't, and the FBI went to court, blah, blah, blah. It was a big thing. That was just a salvo. And the incoming president, President-elect Trump, had said on the campaign trail that Apple, of course, should be forced and should want to
they should gladly put backdoors into their products.
Right, exactly. And that, of course, they should do these things. So here's the interesting thing. Cellebrite was the company that ended up opening that iPhone for the FBI. And putting that case to rest, the case where the FBI was trying to get the courts to force Apple to do it. Right. That case was put to bed by Cellebrite, but the broader issue is not.
That's true, because the FBI has continued to advocate for backdoors into our personal encrypted data. And there are.
While the NSA has not.
Yeah. Well, the NSA has not. That's true. And it's interesting. The NSA has been very clear saying this is a bad idea. This is bad for national security. This is bad for everyone. And the FBI is like, nope, got to do it.
Right. So Cellebrite solved this by basically they had a zero-day exploit. And they using that zero-day, developed some kind of probably software tool. Probably. We don't actually know. But it was probably some kind of software tool to take advantage of this zero-day exploit to be able to bypass the security protections that were on this iPhone that the FBI had in its possession.
Right. And then that let the FBI see the contents of the phone in an unencrypted format without it actually getting destroyed in the process of trying to see it.
Right, where they uncovered vast treasure troves of secret data. Oh, that's right. They got nothing.
They didn't get anything.
Yeah. No. So whatever. But that's actually beside the point. The fact that there was nothing on that phone is utterly beside the fact. So but here's the interesting thing. Cellebrite, this company, this Israeli company that was so instrumental in this case, is now proving instrumental in another way.
Yeah, turns out Cellebrite got hacked.
Do tell.
So some hackers managed to get into Cellebrite servers, and
let's come on, some hackers. It's the Russians or the Chinese, or maybe even the U.S. actually. But go ahead.
Yeah,
it was a government. I mean, we don't know this, but there's no way that wasn't a government entity. There was no way whatsoever. As soon as Cellebrite started making this stuff known, every government on the planet would want to break into the servers and get whatever they could so that they could have these zero day exploits of themselves for themselves.
Sure.
Just saying.
And which I think is totally plausible. Could also be a competing company that wanted to see what secret Cellebrite had that they didn't.
Yeah. Or just to embarrass them.
Or just to embarrass them, discredit them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So Cellebrite, though, they've worked with more than the FBI. They work with law enforcement agencies all across the United States and all around the world. So the law enforcement is their client. So when they were hacked, the names of all these agencies, login information for all these agencies was all exposed. And that kind of plays into part of Apple's argument as to why they should not have been asked to make a hackable version of iOS for the FBI. And it's that anything that you create will eventually leak. And Apple did not want to have this backdoor code for the iPhone leaking out into the wild. And while the FBI said, oh, no, that would never happen. Well, now we have the Cellebrite incident, which shows actually, yeah, that does happen. And there are people that want to make it happen.
Yeah, there are people that want to make it happen, noticeably the Russians, the Chinese, and our own NSA and other intelligence agencies that do this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, this is what government intelligence services do. It's what sophisticated criminal organizations do. Some, obviously not all sophisticated criminal organizations, but there are lots and lots of increasingly large numbers of sophisticated criminal hackers out there making a buck through the means of, you know, this sort of thing.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, the proof in the pudding for Apple's argument and by the way, the encryption world's argument that that the problem with backdoors is that they eventually leak. They eventually get stolen. They eventually fall into the wrong hands, whatever. The proof in the pudding came from one of the very same players involved in the case that the FBI was trying to make against Apple.
Yeah. And it also, I think, plays into the notion that a backdoor for one group is a backdoor for all groups. Because we don't know all of the information that was taken in the Cellebrite hack. But if it's a company that makes their living from finding exploits and then using them to hack into people's devices, well, now you have to wonder how many of the hacks that they were holding for themselves are now known by other entities.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And they, of course, they're under no obligation to disclose that and have not disclosed that. And for all we know, none. It's possible that nothing along those lines was.
That's true. It's possible all that was compromised were the logins for law enforcement agencies, which is still
or really their emails bad. Or mm-hmm. their emails or whatever. But they have a lot of clients around the world, and they have a lot of clients here in the United States. So I don't know. It's actually possible that something that we don't want.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yep. And oh, I just thought of another problem, which is that Cellebrite's going to have a very hard time proving the integrity of the evidence that they have collected prior to this hack happening, because we don't know what data, or we don't know all the data that was accessed. Therefore, it becomes possible that evidence that was collected in investigations was tampered with in some way. If I were a defense attorney, that's something that I would definitely bring up as part of my case for my client.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if no data was compromised in any way. The fact that the hack happened raises the question. So that's really bad for a lot of investigations.
Yeah. I wonder how many. I mean, that's just tricky.
Yeah. Well,
and I mean, like, you know, it's
to court.
In a, you know, it's hard to rock and rhyme. It's right on time. It's a tricky kind of way. It's, and that's just a tricky argument to make.
Yes.
That's right. I brought Run DMC into this.
Well played, sir. Well played indeed. Anyhow, it's now Apple's in a place where Tim Cook can get up on stage and go, told you so.
Right. And of course he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do it. And, you know, he'd be so much classier. And
that's true. I'm a little cranky today. I would do it.
Well, yeah, I'm just petty. I'd do it. I'd stand up and go, see, I told you so. Look at over there. That's Cellebrite. Ha ha. You know, I'd be singing that from the Cupertino rooftops.
I love the fact that you would literally be singing.
Literally, I would literally sing it. I would say, hey, Phil, build me a platform on the rooftops of this thing here. And I want some loudspeakers and I want a microphone. Right. And give me I going to have a megaphone up there with me. I'm going to sing through that megaphone into the microphone through the loudspeakers because I want the world to hear about how I was right. Ha ha.
And I want to hear
that's how I'd play.
I want to hear right as you begin, you lean over off the platform and you go, hit it, boys, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then you jump into the song and the dance and it's going to be glorious.
It'd be a thing. I'm telling you, man, it'd be a thing. It'd be a total thing. But yeah, Tim Cook is generally speaking, he's not only smarter than me, he is classier and
well, and to be fair, we don't know if he has a good singing voice.
And what's that phrase? He's less of a dick.
Oh, I love you, man. Yeah. So, anyhow, there you go.
Okay, so here's the cool thing. I had myself muted because I was typing.
Uh-huh.
And then I go to unmute myself to respond to what you'd said.
Uh-huh.
And my Mac wouldn't give me control of my mouse. It does this thing where, like, I don't, anyway.
You have a passive-aggressive Mac?
Yes, I do. I don't know if it's an issue of the drivers for my Logitech mouse,
or maybe the person who's driving the mouse,
or if it's it's so like you move the mouse and it doesn't move and then it jerks halfway across the screen.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah, and it's intermittent and it's super annoying. I don't know if it's an issue with OS 10 or my Logitech drivers. I love this mouse. I've got the, what's the new one called? It's not the MX Revolution. It's the one that replaced that.
Yeah, I don't use Logitech's pointing devices.
I absolutely love the mouse itself. It like I said, it replaces the MX Revolution. It's a terrific, terrific, terrific mouse, but I have had some issues with it in under Sierra, and I don't know if it's Sierra or if it's Logitech's own drivers.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like way up to date on your
MX Master.
Okay, so you're way up to date and current on your pointing device technology.
Sure.
I still use a Kensington Orbit.
Yeah, it's because you kick it old school.
I kick it old school. Oh, but it's so good. I love that little trackball.
The MX Master is so good. It is the only thing it doesn't do from the MX Revolution, which was the older mouse that I replayed. Like I was buying those things on the gray market, like for, you know, hundreds of dollars because they're so awesome. But the only thing it doesn't do that. Yeah, right. Remember the problems I have with that?
I do.
Is it doesn't do a the scroll wheel used to be able to tilt left and right, and you could set your windows to scroll by tilting the scroll. That was really awesome. They took that out. I'm guessing that was probably a I bet that was a, not only something that the users didn't actually use, but that it was a literal friction point that caused the mechanical, you know, these things to break.
Oh, yeah, sure. I could see.
I'm guessing because they removed it. It's the one feature that I wish was still here, but whatever. Anyway, that's a plug for that. So let's do another plug.
Hey, I think it's time for a plug. I think that sounds great.
Let's do a plug. Let's do a plug for Blue Apron. You know what these guys are, right?
I know about Blue Apron. I did a Blue Apron whole event over the weekend.
That's true. You did do, and I did a Blue Apron event of sorts over the last week. And so this is what Blue Apron does. They send you ingredients for meals. And you use those ingredients and you cook them and you have a meal.
And it's important to note that these are fresh ingredients. So it's not like they're sending you freeze-dried meat or or canned vegetables. I mean, this is
or fresh. Or reconstituted something or another.
Yeah.
These are fresh vegetables. The meats that I got some chicken and some beef in my sample that they sent me. Mm-hmm. The very, very, very fresh, very fresh, very fresh. The quality of the ingredients themselves, the quality of the produce, the quality of everything I got was top notch.
Yeah, it was really good stuff. And I'm backing up the quality of yours based on the quality of mine. Yeah, it was all really good stuff.
Well, so let me tell you why I like these guys so much.
Do tell, Brian.
So, all right. So first of all, they're sending you that, you know, you get the stuff. It comes with these ice packs, everything. It's all nice and kept fresh. You get exactly what you need for the meals. And the way they do it is they'll end up sending you I got the three meals for two people. Mm-hmm. So it was enough food for six meals. Right. But it's three different dishes for two people. And I got everything all at once. And I get a recipe card that not only shows me how to cook it, tells me how to cook it, gives me pictures of how to cook it, shows me, you know, what each step should look like, that sort of thing. But then also, I thought it was just super clever. A picture of each of the things that I needed for that meal so that, you know, if I was a complete cooking idiot, I would be able to know, oh, okay, these are the things I'm going to use.
Oh, right, like, yeah, if you don't know the name of a certain vegetable, you just look at the picture.
Right, you just look at the picture, and it makes it, you know, super easy to sort and super easy to find exactly what you need. I mean, it's really well thought out. But then here's the other thing. This is pertinent. This is definitely specific to me. For absolute sure, this is specific to me. I'm a pretty good cook, but I have a very limited repertoire. The things I've learned how to cook, I cook really well. I know a lot of techniques. I was in the restaurant business for long enough that I know how to handle a knife. Mm-hmm. I know how to chop vegetables. I know how to do these things, but I haven't pushed myself during my life to learn how to cook a whole lot of different things.
And your repertoire just got bigger, didn't it?
It did in such a way that I can reproduce what the heck Blue Apron has sent me. I could do these things myself.
Yeah, I think it's
so
awesome.
I learned from this. So not only did I get these delicious meals with excellent instructions, I learned how to cook these things. I made a quiche. Now, maybe you've made quiches.
I've never made a quiche.
Never made a quiche. I've never made a quiche, but I have now. It was delicious. And it was not only delicious, it was delicious the next day when I had the leftovers, because I got the three meals for two people and I'm cooking for myself. So I ended up having leftovers for each of my meals. And the leftovers in each instance were tasty. The whole thing is tasty. It's awesome. Fun, easy to do, fresh. I love this stuff.
I also love the social aspect. And so like what I did, because I already know about this, I wanted to get other people's perspective. So I had friends make the meals also and tell me what they thought. And it was just a wonderful social gathering, and everyone had fun. And of course, all the food turned out great. And even my friend's cat, who got to taste little samples, thought it was awesome. So human and cat approved.
Okay. Fine.
Just saying. Hey, I'm in Boulder. These things are important.
All right. So listen, I gave you the pitch for these guys from their vantage point, from my vantage point. I mean, this is very, like I said, very specific to me. It taught me how to cook some things. It vastly improved my cooking skills, my repertoire, things that I'm comfortable with cooking. Again, that's just me. Some of the things that they want us to tell you about is it's affordable. For less than $10 a person per meal, you're going to get these great seasonal recipes, mm-hmm. Pre-portioned ingredients, and everything is going to be terrific. The stuff is easy. Mm-hmm. When you are looking at your whatever your plan is, you get presented with, because what's the other plan?
It's the family plan where you get the family plan, for right. four people per meal as opposed to two.
Right. So if you're doing that, or you're doing the three meal plan for two people, you get presented with three different meals, and it takes you less than a minute to change them, because you can choose from the other meals that they have available for that particular time frame. Mm-hmm. And it's easy. The stuff is great. So,
and you only have to do it on the weeks you want.
Right.
Yeah. I want them to try it too. Brian, is there a way they can do that without having to risk their own money?
Yes. It's incredible. This is actually kind of ridiculous, because what they're doing is you can get your first three meals for two people for free. For free. For free. They're going to send you enough stuff to make three meals for free. I mean, this is
OMG.
Kind of crazy.
And, there's free, and then there's free. What about the shipping?
No, they got that covered.
So it's like totally free? It's really free?
It's totally free. It's three free meals for two people for free. And listen, really that's good food. That's, yeah, and it's really good food. And that's, I guess, really, that's how much they're standing behind their product. So go to blueapron.com/ACM. Right? That's for Apple Context Machine.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, it's very clever. It's blueapron.com/ACM. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. And I mean that. Go do this.
Yeah, if you don't do it soon, you're going to be hungry.
Yeah, and it's kind of a no-brainer, because the first three meals for free.
Yeah, just go do it.
Yeah, go do it. blueapron.com/ACM. We are happy as can be to have them sponsoring us. We have always been lucky. We've always had great sponsors here on ACM. Always had great sponsors on ACM. I am so glad to count Blue Apron among them. And I have personally benefited from their sponsorship, and I would like you guys to benefit too. That's just a fact.
Yeah. blueapron.com/ACM.
Slash ACM. Got it. Alrighty, so let's see here. I kind of actually want to. I want to be done a few minutes early on this one. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
Okay, but yes.
I was going to say it's actually hard to picture us being able to stop talking long enough to end a show early. But go ahead.
Did you notice that Apple actually released a new shipped an update this week? As a matter of fact.
Yeah, they did an update for Logic and GarageBand.
Yeah, Logic and GarageBand were both updated today. But here's the interesting thing. Apple released a press release for this.
So clearly, these are like brand new versions, you know, like not like point releases. These are like brand new versions, crazy new feature. Wait, what?
Point releases, brother.
Apple did point release updates for Logic and GarageBand, and then did a press release.
Yes. Now, first of all, I'm just happy to have Logic updated. I this makes me happy as can be. Now, there's a little context, because this is NAMM this week, the National Association of, I don't know what's NAMM stand for.
And money.
National Association of Music Merchants.
Oh, I was so close.
Yeah, it's close enough. It's a big trade show. It's the biggest trade show, certainly in the U.S., probably in the world, for the music industry. You know, lots of, you know, new instruments and new products and whatnot are
point release updates.
And point release updates, right. So Apple doesn't really attend NAMM, but this release and this press release was clearly because of NAMM, I would say. I think that's kind of a no-brainer. Don't know for a fact, but I think it's a no-brainer. But I also can't help. Yeah.
So the features that they announced, are they like big features in this point release?
No. The GarageBand 2.2 for iOS update is not a major update. Actually, Apple used the words major updates in its press release. I might add, but I would call the GarageBand 2.2 for iOS update not major. There's a new sound browser. It adds the Alchemy synthesizer, the synthesizer that Apple put together, which is, you know, cool. Which is fine. And you can do multi-take recording. That's actually a pretty good feature.
Oh, that's
and cool. what that means is you can set a section of a song on a loop and it'll just keep playing through, and you can record and record and record. And then later you can actually turn around and choose which recording you want to use. It is a very convenient. It's actually kind of a pro level feature. I'm surprised to see it in GarageBand, let alone GarageBand for iOS. Even still, I wouldn't call that. And there's also some one tap vocal effects. Not a major release.
Okay.
New features to be sure, but not a major release. The Logic Pro X 10.3 update, it has a new interface, and really it's more of a tweaked interface. They further refined the colors that are involved, and I think it actually looks gorgeous.
Okay.
And so that's good. They've added touch bar support.
Okay.
Right. That which, you know, you would expect that.
Yes.
And then they one of the touch bar things, of course, you get controls, you know, playback controls and things
right.
that you can do in the touch bar. But then you can also use the touch bar for drum pads for, you know, triggering for like doing a MIDI. So
you can do little fingertip like, drums right on your MacBook Pro.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That's fun.
That's definitely fun. Actually, probably useful for some people, for some, you know, producers and desktop musicians.
Yeah. Mix it on the plane. Sure.
Right. And then they added a new feature called Track Alternatives, which lets you create playlists of regions and edits. And you can sort of switch through those playlists. And what that allows you to do is to test different, you know, mixes or different recordings or even different arrangements. That's definitely something for the, you know, for more accomplished producers, I should imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other minor features. So it's a point update. It's a significant point update. How's that?
A significant point update. Has Apple, as far as you can recall, done a significant point update press release like this before?
You know, did Apple do that for Logic Pro 10.2?
That's the question.
I am looking. 10.2
is where I'm going with this line of questioning is this something new for Apple, or is this something that they've done before? And if it's new, why are they doing this now?
And I'm not finding a press release in 2015 or 2016 with the word logic.
Okay.
Yep. No, I don't think I can't recall having seen a point update get a press release. And there's one of two ways. To be mostly pedantic, infinite ways to look at it. But one thing would be that, well, they're just taking advantage of NAMM. They want to make sure that they get some attention at NAMM.
Sure. Okay, that's possible.
Could it be instead that Apple is feeling the criticism about having only released 14 new products in 2016?
That's possible, too.
Because that's how many new products Apple released in 2016. It's 14 of them. 14 new products is nothing.
And that's including AirPods, right? Just making sure.
That is including AirPods. Okay. And I think, and I hope that this is actually the case. I hope that Tim Cook and the rest of Apple are feeling that pressure. I hope they're looking at 2016 and going, oh, wow, that really is a freaking embarrassment, isn't it? Right. And they're like, OK, you know what? You know what? Fine. We're going to ship some products. Now, I'm not saying that like in the last 2 weeks, they decided they were going to ship these updates to Logic Pro and GarageBand today. But I'm not saying that at all, but making a big deal about it. I'm hoping that is the beginning of an onslaught of great new updates and iterative product designs and whatnot for this year. That's what I'm hoping.
You know, I'm hoping the same. I like the idea of Apple just hammering us with amazing new products all year long. And then we get to the end of the year and Apple can say, look, you know, we know you guys are kind of really worried in 2016, but you didn't need to be, because all that stuff that you weren't seeing then, it's because we were getting it so that it was perfectly amazing.
No. It's because they are taking their eye off the ball. Right. No. Because stuff still needed to be released in 2016. We needed more back updates than we got in 2016. Right. So there's nothing. No. I don't care what happens this year. I don't care what happens this year that does not excuse last year. Not buying that, sir. Not buying that at all. But I will take a great 2017. I will take a great 2017 to apologize for 2016. That's what I will take as a tiny, insignificant shareholder and a fan and customer of Apple's. Right? I will take a great 2017 as an apology for 2016. But nothing is going to make up for 2016.
I just want to say that I'm really happy with my Apple Watch Series 2, my iPhone 7, and my Touch Bar MacBook Pro.
Yeah, the products that did release were all pretty good.
Yeah, yep, they were. Although I am kind of bummed that we didn't see a new 12.9-inch iPad Pro. That would have been nice.
Don't even. Yeah, let's not go down. Let's not go down that path. We've gone down that path, and let's not talk about the fact that the Mac Pro. It's 3 years and 7 months old. Let's just not even mention that.
Yeah, good call. We just won't mention that.
We just won't even mention it. Instead, we will say this is January 18th, and Apple put out a press release announcing two significant point updates and Logic Pro X.
Yeah, that's true. And Logic
Pro. Right? I would like to think that if it was just GarageBand 2.2 for iOS, that there would not have been a press release. I'd like to think that. I'd like to think that Logic Pro is like basically GarageBand got to tag along.
My guess is that you are right.
But you know, whatever. With Apple having ditched Aperture, I'm always worried about Logic going away.
No, I totally get it. You're right to be concerned.
Well, this is. 10.2 was released last year, and it was also a solid update. Mm-hmm. And 10.3 being released this year is being released now. This is good. This is a good start to the year.
Yeah.
So now let's see the rest of that stuff. Let's see some iLife, other iLife updates. Let's see some iWork updates.
That would be awesome.
And then let's get some of those new Mac things. Let's get some of those too. Oh, yeah. I'm getting excited now. It's going to be a good year.
Come on, KB Lake. Yeah.
All right. Let's get out of here because I'm expecting a phone call.
Okay. Well, then we need to wrap up.
What? Before we do, we should.
Fine. Go ahead. Fine.
Blue Apron. They're sponsoring us. BlueApron.com/ACM. Go there and get your three free meals.
Yeah. Totally do that.
Yeah, go do that.
Yeah. Don't want you going hungry, kids. Mm-mm. Is it safe for me to push the button now?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.